Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
Mm-hmm. I wish he was a fat guy. Why is an Iron Fist fat? Why does Luke Cage have to be so sexy and attractive?
Right? Yeah. Would you care to elaborate on?
He glistens for crying out loud.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Hey, welcome to Breaking the Panel. Your weekly dose of awesome sauce for everything that is comic books, from the books, the back bins, the big screens, the small screens, and everything in between. We have got Iron Fist on Netflix today. We're going to talk about that in the panel. Today, I am the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall. Going down the list, we've got the man who has a bigger ego than me, the Iron Chris.
That's me.
Yes, that's you. That's where you speak up. And all right,
big
Danny.
Ego, small hands.
That was Paul Klotz right there, ringing it in.
Yo.
Now, joining us, we'll get to the newest guest here in a second, but everybody is familiar with one of the great hosts over at Geek Versus. We got Tony P. Henderson.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me, man.
It's been going well. How's your show going, Tony? How's everything doing over there?
Going well. Having a good time. Just trucking along. I think we're on episode, I think we just did 124, and we have not killed each other yet.
Well, it's because you one of you walked away for a while, but she's back now.
So, we're only good over an hour. It's any person's game. You never know, but
it's fun, and you should definitely check out the Geek Versus line of podcasts. And then joining us for the first time on this show, we've got hashtag Damn It Carl, otherwise known as BC Dodge, who is the host of What a Relief podcast, the creator of the Venn Network, and an awesome part of Giant Size Team Up, helping us out over here. How's it going, Carl?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? And thank you for letting me join you guys this evening, because I'm really excited for this conversation.
Yeah, you sound so excited.
You say that now, because you don't know.
Tell us about the What a Relief podcast.
So the What a Relief podcast is a podcast that I co-host, and it is the official podcast of the nonprofit, or as we call them around here, the NGO, which is a non-government organization for IRUSA, which helps to provide food, clothes, shelter, education, water. I know right now that we're... See, I'm like totally about to bring the whole like tone of the show down here, but right now we're working big for Africa, because they're having like one of the worst droughts and one of the worst famines they've had since the 80s. You know, you guys remember like We Are the World, that kind of stuff? Yeah. They're saying that this is even beyond that, so that's where we're focusing our energy. But again, I'm one of the hosts of the podcast there, and we essentially interview our staff, we interview people that we've helped, and we interview our partners. I've had the great pleasure to sit down with representatives and congressmen and CEOs of other nonprofit organizations, and so, yeah, man.
Yeah, man, we're groovy. It's awesome. All right, so we've all seen.
Actually, wait a minute. We went to Toylana a couple of weeks ago. That's it. I just wanted to jump on his story.
Did you see some cool toys, Tony?
Yeah, we bought some things, and I even made a video. But I mean, I know it's not water to Africa or anything, but it's all I got. I'm sorry.
You didn't put it in the cloud, did you? It hasn't leaked?
No.
There was different toys. Different toys?
Yeah. Hey, you know, I joke, man, but that's actually really awesome. I think that's cool, but it doesn't stop me from joking.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, Carl. You trial by fire. So, all right. Iron Fist dropped this weekend. We're all at varying levels of watching it. So we're going to discuss some overview. We're going to discuss some responses. But Chris, you found some stuff today that you really wanted to talk about before we got talking about the show Iron Fist or the discussion of it. Yes.
Real quick before Chris runs with us, just to let folks at home know, we're going to be non-spoiler right now, and we'll warn you before we get into any spoilers, but we're going to be spoiler light for pretty much the whole show, which is a little bit of a departure from our normal format for these. So if you haven't watched it all, don't worry, you can hang out. All right, cool. Chris, take it away.
Okay. So Inverse Entertainment did an interview with Iron Fist co-creator Roy Thomas, and the gist of the links will be in the show notes, but the gist of this interview, the reason I wanted to talk about it is because, good Lord, for the past, year and a half, we've been talking about diversification in comics properties and representation in comics properties. And as we all know, when Iron Fist was first announced, everybody wondered if Marvel would take that step to recast Danny Rand into an Asian American to fill that role, and has gotten a lot of flack because it didn't, because it chose a white actor. And while it doesn't necessarily help the argument in any way, shape, or form, it really kind of gives you, I think, a glimpse into, let's say, generational concepts of diversity. Because Roy Thomas from his perspective, he doesn't think that people that have a problem with this property, the Netflix property, really understand the character or the property. And he really feels like there's just not space for... He doesn't call them social justice warriors in a negative connotation. He doesn't use the term at all, but that's the way the some of the comments come off. And at one point, he says, "It's just an adventure story. Don't these people have something better to do than worry about the fact that Iron Fist isn't Oriental or whatever word? I know Oriental isn't the right word now either." So it's like, Charles, I know you're from the South. You've got that grandma who says some things that probably shouldn't be said anymore, but it's too cute when she says it because she's a little old lady and she is not worth $1 billion, so it's okay.
Right, there's nothing to take.
But it's the problem is he's diluting his point by saying it like this, and I think he's on too much in the defensive on this. He's not looking at this as a chance to open discussion. He's wanting to close down the discussion and deflect, and he's doing so in what can be perceived as a pretty offensive manner. Again, he owned the fact that he knows the word it's not the right word. I think just from the era that he grew up and his experiences.
Well, he grew up in 1800s England?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, I mean, Oriental was kind of a word that they would throw around back there. It's not the right word. And that caused Jessica Henwick, Paul, I believe that's your future wife?
I can only be so lucky.
The actress that plays...
Colleen Wing.
Colleen Wing. Good Lord. It's already happened. But so she responded on Twitter by saying Oriental is a term used to describe rugs, not people. And she's absolutely right. Yes. Now she took the high road, and she didn't say anything about the article. She didn't say anything about Roy himself. She just posted that, or she just tweeted that. Now her fans have all made the connection on their own. And I think that was a very classy way to respond to it, because I don't think that he necessarily wanted to get into that kind of... He wants the property to be able to live and breathe and stand on its own feet without some of this artificial arguments that are being made, I think, about it. So
yeah, the article itself is a lot... The interview is a lot more expansive than just this one topic. Mm-hmm. And he does talk... It's obvious that he and other comic creators of his generation... You know, they created these properties and these characters out of love for a genre, or, to tell stories. It was never like, I just want to, take this ethnicity or this race or this faith or whatever and pin it into a corner and make it my little trophy, of that. It's always been, at least from what I've seen, from a place of admiration. And he kind of talks about that a little bit. Cause like he pitched the idea at one point of doing a group with like a black person, an Asian person, and a white person. And, they were a group together kind of thing. And he's like, this is the stuff that we're trying to do. And some of that stuff, we've seen come to fruition, some of it not. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit with Luke Cage, where Luke Cage came out of the blaxploitation era, and, you know, obviously the Luke Cage of the 70s wouldn't fly today. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think, like, there's a couple things going on here. One, there's definitely a generational disconnect where folks of his generation just... Things move so quickly today. You know what I mean? Like, especially in social issues. I mean, look at what's happened in the last 10, 15 years. You know, we've gone from a lot of subsets, a lot of minorities being incredibly marginalized to being much less so, but still not, we're not out of the, you know, out of the fight here. You know, gay marriage, for example, being a big one, you know, it's such a fight for a long time. And, you know, it's in jeopardy again to a certain extent. But the point is, like, society shifted and society's values as a whole shifted. And people's individual beliefs are their own, you know what I mean? But, like, there's a whole generation of people that are kind of getting left behind in that shift, and they don't really understand what's happening. And I say that not as an excuse. It doesn't excuse, you know, bigoted behavior or anything like that. But I think it's very easy for younger people, and I say this as somebody in my early 30s, people I see coming up behind me, to, like, just automatically assume somebody's a bigot because they have archaic views on something or use archaic language. I mean, just look at how we refer to people of color. You know, the name for them has changed numerous times.
I'm a half person of color. I can't keep up what the name's supposed to be.
Right. Right, and you know, I say that today, and a year from now there could be a new term for a group of people, yeah, and I could be the dinosaur. You know what I mean? And it's tough. And so I'm not necessarily advocating that it's okay to, you know, run around and do stuff the way it used to be, because that's the way it used to be. I hate that argument, especially when I hear it from you know, the older folks in my life and that I encounter. I'm just trying to say that I don't necessarily know that it's always coming from a place of menace. You know, it's not really meant to be a mean thing or even just a bigoted thing. It's just a lot of it's ignorance and not being able to keep up with the rapidly changing social environment that we live in today.
So I actually have a question, because I saw this interview and I saw it was actually trending on Twitter for a while that they didn't cast someone of a specific ethnicity to play this character. Mm-hmm. And I want to be upfront, which is that coming into this, I have no previous knowledge of Iron Fist. I mean, I was aware that he existed in the universe, and I was, you know, and I was aware of his superpower, but I had no knowledge of the comic. That was not one that I read when I was growing up. But in seeing that this was trending and in seeing articles like this, I researched it a little bit, and all of the images that I found, he was just a skinny little white dude.
And he is. I mean,
so, but yeah, so I'm really confused where this conversation over the actor's ethnicity is taking place, because look at the comic. He's a skinny white dude. They cast a skinny white dude. Why are we having this conversation?
It's because people thought this was... Sorry.
No, yeah, go ahead, Chris.
This would be the opportunity for Marvel to make one of those changes to a lead character, because we've seen him do it to tertiary characters and secondary characters. You know, Heimdall and Thor, Hogarth herself. We've seen them make these changes to ethnicity, to gender, so we know that they do it. I think people were looking for them to take that next bold step and say, okay, now we can do this to lead characters. Now, from my perspective, as the guy on the panel that is always talking about source material and paying proper respect to the source material, if you really boil Danny Rand down, it's not about white. It's about the ultimate outsider to this culture coming in, embracing the culture, and doing everything he can, fighting tooth and nail to become the pinnacle of this culture. And to me, like, I don't care what side of the fence you are on. I don't care what your ethnicity is in that instance. Like, to me, that's a good story to just to be, I can go somewhere that I'm not necessarily welcome and somewhere that I am not from, and I can still be the best that there is there.
Regardless of your race, you can probably relate to the
exactly.
work he's putting in.
Exactly.
To get it done. One point, you know, RKC recently posted an article about this. He finished the entire series, and the reason it's an issue is because there's an old trope where the white guy shows up
takes like 10 minutes. Now he's the master of all things kung fu. And that's not the case in this story.
No.
You know, he does train for a long time. He doesn't become like Sorcerer Supreme or anything.
Spoilers! You know. Spoilers!
Yeah, sorry to break it to you, but he... you know, he's just good after, you know, training for 15 years. So it doesn't make him, at least to my understanding, like this, you know, impossible figure. So I think it's okay, but...
It's actually, without getting into too many spoilers here, the interesting part is the fact that Danny's an outsider is pretty integral to the development of the story later on in the in this season. And I don't want to give too much away, but basically, you know, the Iron Fist itself, the name is a mantle. You know, it's the immortal Iron Fist.
The immortal, yep.
It's a power and a role that is passed down over generations. And, you know, it's earned. I mean, he says that many times throughout the series. He says, you know, I earned this. And, you know, to an extent, that's probably very true. I think one of the interesting things is that there's a storytelling angle there. And again, I'm trying to dodge spoilers, but I think they're trying to explore that maybe, you know, this mantle, because the mantle is said to have some, it's gifted by a entity that has some level of sentience. You know, you're tested and then it's granted to you. And I don't want to give too much away for anybody who wants to see what comes of it. Basically, I would make the argument that in this story so far, what we're seeing is perhaps a demonstration of that entity's desire to see the role expanded beyond what it's traditionally been held as. Because it's traditionally the defender of Kunlun. Like, he's supposed to stand the gate, you know, and he's not supposed to leave. Like, when the gates open to the mortal realm, the, you know, where we live, he's supposed to stand there and guard it against the hand, because he's the, you know, he's the destroyer of the hand or the guardian of the gate. And I think that there's some hints there that we're going beyond, you know, that narrow definition in choosing him. You know what I mean?
Well, I find a little more interesting in this day and age, especially in our current America, that everybody's, the controversy is made up, by the way. It's not like major people are coming out and going, oh, this is an issue, like they did with Doctor Strange and how the Ancient One was changed. That was a lot of people going, okay, this is wrong. We dealt with it then. We talked about that. But here, it's almost a stirred up fake controversy. It's hard to pinpoint who's actually upset that he's white. But then I read the article that you linked here, Chris. I was going through it, where the response of the actress who plays Colleen Wing about it, and it's written so divisively, intentionally, that they're trying to cause that thing of, oh, the and let me get his name, let me get the notes right here. Roy Thomas was quoted as calling all Asians Orientals, and no, he wasn't. Go read what he said.
Yeah, he said a line later, I know that's not the right word anymore.
So right,
the term that he's used his entire life. And
he even acknowledged this is not the right term.
Right. Yeah.
But what's interesting, though, to me is all the religious people have not come out to boycott the show. Right. Because Kunlun is one of the 12 capital cities of heaven. Oh, but that's OK. But God forbid a white character be white. You know, I'm not saying you should come out and protest everything. I'm like, if you're going to make us the stuff, let's change the gears a little bit. Right. Yeah. Let's protest the religious aspect of this instead of a character doing what he's supposed to do.
Please do not summon forth that nonsense. I think it's a case of jumping on the bandwagon. I mean, we had Doctor Strange this past year. We have Ghost in the Shell, which comes out in a week.
Right.
That has been, now Ghost in the Shell and Doctor Strange have been, you know, forefront in the public perception for this issue. So I see Iron Fist, I see people who are trying to make a fuss out of it being like, oh, look, it's happening everywhere. This is widespread. And it's like, well, you're kind of cherry picking a little bit here.
Here's the other thing with that. This easily, I'm not saying it is, these are theoretical thoughts here, but this easily could be somebody in the marketing department at Marvel stirring some stuff, because this kind of discussion puts more eyes on your product.
I really don't think that's what's going on.
I don't think that's the way either, but it can be. And that's something we have to be careful about. When all we do is focus on controversy as a society, what are we going to get from marketing departments? Controversy. Because people are talking about it.
No, I think this is really just a certain subset of really hardcore, radical, social issues-minded people who are like trying to find every opportunity to bring the battlefield to the forefront. You know what I mean?
And see, and my problem with this particular battle is what's the sliding scale? Because I've seen I've seen people, well, why couldn't it have been an Asian American actor? Well, why did it have to be an Asian American actor? Are you saying that you wanted him portrayed? Exactly. Yeah. Are you wanted him portrayed as an Asian American character, or you just want an Asian American actor to be in there? Why can't it be an Asian character or an Asian actor? And why does it have to be a dude? Why can't it be a female? Like, stop. Because when you start picking these battles and drawing these lines, you're completely alienating other segments too that are thinking they're not getting their representation.
And to that point, I was just going to say, actually, I think Iron Fist should be half black. To your point, if that's what we're doing, you know, and it's an extreme example, I get why they went with Asian, being that he trained, you know, with Asians and everything. But, you know, although an extreme example, you're right. At some point, you have to stop, you know. I wish he was a fat guy. Why is an Iron Fist fat? Why does Luke Cage have to be so sexy and attractive?
Right?
Would you care to elaborate on that?
He glistens. We're crying out loud.
Well, Tony, if you'd come to the table with more than 50%, perhaps you could be sexy and glistening too.
So that brings up the question, though. Okay, we've discussed Batman and Superman and all that stuff, but Chris, you're a huge Superman fan. Could you get behind, if it was done well, and the only thing they changed was the race and or sex, you know, that I know they're not the same, okay, but I'm talking about what we're talking about, changing the gender or changing the race or both. Could you get behind that super person?
Okay, so I've already told you I can handle my Idris Elba Superman.
That's right, you did bring that up.
But here's in all honesty, if you want to give me a black Superman, that's fine. If you want to give me a black Clark Kent, that's where I start having problems.
Wait, what? You can't.
No. Look. You can have. Why does it's fine for Superman to be black, but why does that character of Clark Kent? Why can't that character of Clark Kent just be a reporter at the Daily Planet? And you've chosen some other character. You've made another character to be Superman.
That's not the canon, right? That's not the source material. I'll say if they give you the Superman that's Hope, the one that you grew up with, and changed it to Idris Elba, you don't want Idris Elba being.
What Chris is saying here is you can't take Luke Cage and call him Luke Cage and make him white, right?
Right.
I would agree with that, yes.
You can't. It's not allowed. So what he's saying is don't make it Clark Kent. Make it John Jones. Not as a bad example, you know what I mean?
But like, John Irons, was it, from Death and Life? Yep. Yeah, John Irons.
Yep. Right, yeah.
John Irons, yeah.
I just picked a character that's represented as a black character.
What I'm hearing is... you want white Clark Kent, and then he takes off the glasses, goes into the phone booth.
That was the exact same thing that I thought,
Amy,
too.
And on the inside, we all want to be black. Yeah.
I could see Idris Elba putting on, like, white face for the Clark Kent.
Oh, my God.
I grew up in a town of 4,000 people in a small Midwest Kansas town of 4,000 people. I remember... two black people in that town in the entirety of my growing up. So it's a little weird to now make that such a part of the character to make it a black character. There's nothing saying that somebody from the South, where there's a larger black population, can't have those same moral upbringings that Clark Kent in Kansas had. There's nothing that says that that character can't inspire hope.
I actually agree with you 100%. Although I would like to see more representation, I don't want you to just take Clark Kent from Kansas and now he's black. That's weird, you know.
Yeah.
And it's weird, and it's almost dare I say pandering ish. You know, it's somewhat pandering. Now, new characters or the mantle is passed or something along those lines. Right. Great, you know.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, that's something that's been proven to be effective with Spider-Man, for example. You know, we've got your Peter Parker, we've had a couple others, like when you dealt with the clone stuff, and then we also have Miles Morales. And Miles is a great Spider-Man. Huh. Fantastic. You know what I mean? It's a different sort of story, but it's still a great story. And he definitely still fits the excitement of that character, the mantle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. there's no reason why these mantles can't be passed to literally anybody of any ethnicity. I would love to see a female Iron Fist. If I'm not, I mean, I don't think it fits the story, but if like the direction they go in is Colleen Wing becomes the new Iron Fist, I will be fist pumping for a long time. I'll be like, yes, this is awesome. It's not the way they're going to go. But, and I'm just saying that because Colleen Wing is literally the best part of this whole show. But
I was trying to figure out which direction your fist pump was going. Above the table, sir.
Right, yeah. Like, you know, at the end of Breakfast Club.
We really hear what Klotz is saying, right? He wants to see Melissa McCarthy as Iron Fist.
That would check a lot of boxes in the reference.
Yeah, that would help Tony there too, I think. Yeah.
Oh, so we're good now? We're good. We checked all the boxes. Okay.
Well, Tony, I've said that before. We've covered, you know, representation a lot on the show.
Yeah.
It's actually probably one of the most prominent social issues in comic related content right now. And I've said in the past that when you take something from somebody else just to give it to a certain ethnic group just to appease people, that is pandering and it's insulting to them.
No, it is. It's insulting to everybody. It's right. You know, it's almost like, here, you happy now? Clark Kent's a black guy. You happy? Like, no, I'm not, you know. Mm-hmm. That's like, I had no problems with Thor. I had no problems with Riri Williams as Iron Man. Because it's not, they didn't just change Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even with Logan in the films, they're handing it off to a Hispanic little girl, right? And that's a mantle.
Because in the books right now, X-23 is the Wolverine, you know? So she assumed the mantle because there was an absence there. It's fine. You know what I mean?
And Charles, we don't like that word.
Yeah. I don't care. You're from white middle bred America. You've lost all your say, sir.
So I'm an official on what words we don't like.
Carl, what you got, man?
Well, no, I was gonna ask because as somebody who doesn't have, like I said, I've never followed this in particular comic book series, but
I think
know
anybody has. It's all right.
But I know there's a female Thor. I know there's pretty much female versions of everybody in the Marvel universe. Does Iron Fist have a female version in the comics?
Not yet.
Okay. Well.
But the way Marvel's been going in recent years, I mean, they've gender bend or race swapped just about everybody, and I don't really have a problem with that.
No, right. I was just asking because you guys were talking about, you know, the gender, checking that box, as it were, and I'm like, well, they've done it right across the board, so why not, you know? But apparently it doesn't exist, and I've gone ahead and thrown a wet blanket in the entire conversation, so you're all welcome for that.
It's, you know, that's the thing, is there's a storytelling opportunity here. We're going to get into more about the show itself very soon, and I'll be honest, I don't know that Finn Jones was the best pick for this role, and I'll expand on that a little later. So I personally would have no problem if they found a way to transition the mantle away from Danny, even if they kept him around as a character in the overall, you know, universe that they're building here with the Defenders shows, you know what I mean? If he was somehow stripped of the mantle and it was passed to somebody else, I don't even think that I think that would be some interesting storytelling. And that opens the door to being just about anybody. And they could cast an Asian. They could cast anybody, you know? I mean, that's the thing, you know? So I don't think people are opposed to that kind of thing. It's just don't take the, you know, the core character there, your Clark Kent, your Danny Rand, and try to gender or race bend that specific character and try to jam it into the old box. That doesn't work. But if you want to tell a different story with the same mantle, people are going to be relatively open to that. You know what I mean? There's always some detractors.
I mean, we could always take the mechanic from Futurama and make him Carl Wing, and you know, he's the son of the dragon. You know, it didn't work. It didn't, you know, just changing for changing's sake never works. All right, you know what? Now is a good time. We're going to take that quick break. You know how this goes. We run the ads, keep the lights on. We appreciate you listening. And we'll be back. We're going to talk about the actual storytelling and the actual show of Iron Fist right after this. And we're back. Here we go. I don't know why I did it that way. I just did it that way. So we've got, let's say which... How many episodes? We'll get on a list. I've watched 4 episodes so far. Chris?
13.
Klotz?
I've seen it all.
Carl?
7.
Tony?
44 minutes.
I love not being the filthy casual on the show sometimes. It's great. But, Tony, you are a man of great... I'm trying to think, perception. So you can, you're not obviously going to go into the whole thing. I think you're interested in the conversation for sure. But I think from watching even the first episode, you can have some very valid thoughts here. And I want our audience to hear that too, is that here at Breaking the Panel, we want to make sure that all voices are represented. And it's not always about the hardcore. I mean, Klotz, I'm going to let you kick off. So here's what happened with Klotz. It drops right at 3 a.m. Eastern on Thursday night, going into Friday or something like that. And I'm not sure what time you started watching it, Klotz, but you ended up watching it all in one day, right?
Yeah. So I think it was probably around noon or so. I pick it up. It might have even been a little bit sooner or earlier in the day than that. I pick it up and I start watching the first episode and I start texting Chris because I'm like, this is
I miss rough. You, boo.
Well, no. Okay. This kind of stuff. Now, keep in mind, Chris was on drill. So, like, I knew he probably wasn't going to be able to watch it all at once or watch it, you know. And I was like, oh, I don't want to ruin anything for you. But I started texting back and forth with him, and I'm like, this is rough. And, you know, just, and we'll get into that in a second. But, yeah, I did not start out thinking I was going to have the greatest time watching this show. But needless to say, I'll circle back around to that in a minute after you go through everybody, Charles. But I end up watching all 13 episodes in one day because, one, the choices I've made with my life are poor. And two, because I wanted to, because by the, you know, by halfway through, I was like, I want to see this to completion. You know, I want to know where we're going, you know. So it definitely, for me, it picked up, it found its legs and, you know, started running. So. Go ahead, Charles.
That's cool.
Three, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Tony knows you too well there, Klotz.
So. I mean,
he has a camera in your house.
I gotta watch. I'm watching Iron Fist tonight.
Yeah, Tony. Speaking of which, Tony,
I totally binged Narcos.
Tony, that camera, your last payment bounced, buddy. Like,
come on. Nice. Well, you know what? Correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, but you are a single man. Is that about right?
I mean, there's some ladies around, but yeah.
I'm sure you have your choice. I'm sure you have your choice of entertainment and company for the evening. What I'm saying is you have control of your life, whereas Carl, well, okay, that sounded bad because I was about to say Carl and I are married, therefore we don't have control of our lives.
Hey, thanks for that.
No, you're right. I live by myself. Now, see, now I got sad.
Charles,
I don't think that's sad at all.
No, actually, I kind of envy you every once in a while. I mean, I enjoy my life, don't get me wrong, but when it comes to Marvel movies, I'm like, everybody got to move out for 2 days. Just get out. Just give me 2 days to
yeah, get my but stuff you done. See, for me, it was about the logistics because I was going through it. I figured, you know, whatever, the dude's got that kind of time on his hands, so good for him. But I'm like, it's 13. Was it 13 episodes altogether?
Yeah.
That means you had 13 straight hours. So did you, like, you know, bring a bucket to the couch for you? Were you still getting up to use the restroom?
Mobile devices go anywhere, Carl.
On mobile?
I make terrible choices. No, I did take a break in the middle of the day for an hour or two, as I recall. But I don't run a normal schedule compared to most people, so like it's not weird for me to stay up for 20-24 hours and then sleep for 12.
Well, and this is a good place to point out that Netflix and that time, the little time window at the bottom of the screen, lies, because once it gets through all of the credits and the time stops, you still got 5 minutes as they give credits to all of the different places in the world where they have Netflix.
Right, yeah.
And that's a perfect time to go take a leak, because you know you got like 5 minutes before the next ep starts.
Oh, yeah, there was plenty of that. There was like, all right, episode switch in, time to run to the restroom, and I'm back.
Well, you know, good for you, man.
It's not great. You know, let's not lie.
I will say, as a 40-something year old male, I don't have the bladder capacity to do that anymore. So, but good on you, bro.
Well, he didn't say that his mid thigh was dry when he got back to his big bathroom breaks. He just had time to run.
So I know I always like to approach these episodes when they come out of the series, when they drop, with my wife. She has definitely, since marrying me, grown into liking geeky things and sci-fi stuff and comic book stuff. And while she didn't really care for Daredevil, she did watch all of Jessica Jones. I don't think she watched much of Luke Cage. She kind of watched it on and off. I think previously I said she watched all of it, but then she corrected me the other night. So it grabs everybody in a different way, but I knew I needed to save it to sit down. and watch with her. Honestly, crossing my fingers that she wouldn't want to watch it because then I could binge it. And now she's like, no, I'll watch it with you. I'm like, okay.
And that was the same exact thing that happened to me. My family does not sit. They didn't like Jessica Jones. They didn't like Luke Cage. They didn't like Daredevil. So I'm like, oh, I'm just going to binge this on my own while everybody is asleep. Nope. Everybody in my house wants to stay up, and they all don't watch it without me. I'm like, dude, really? So now I'm stuck, and I gotta wait.
Yeah, but you still are ahead of me.
As mentioned, I live by myself. You can't just be like, F them and just watch it anyway. It doesn't work that way.
Oh, God, no.
Nice try, Tony. But no.
I'm learning.
Now, you said you're one episode in. Do you plan on binging, or how are you planning on consuming the show?
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to someone recently. It's to have a geek podcast and like have a geek website and all that. I don't have a lot of time, and that might be why. I don't have a lot of time to watch TV. So usually weekends is when I get my shows in. I want to watch it. I'm ready to watch it. I may, you know, planning on doing a lot of nothing Friday night and maybe watching it, but also the Chappelle specials came out.
Yeah, I know. I was watching that. I watched the first hour of that. It's pretty funny.
And I'm kind of more excited to see that than I am Iron Fist, honestly. So I do plan on finishing it. I just don't know when.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tony. So based on the first episode is...
No, I heard the reviews were horrendous for Iron Fist. So I had all this negativity thrown at me. So when I was apprehensive to even watch it. But once I sat down and watched it, I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to seeing where the story goes. And, you know, there's, you know, what was up with the homeless guy. And I'm interested in all of it. So I enjoyed the first episode. I didn't hate it at all, which is why I said enjoyed. But I wanted to elaborate.
So that's the weird spot we're in, whereas, you know, Carl, I'm going to throw it out here for a second. Carl, being our SEO and marketing guru, he's like, we got, you know, Iron Fist this week or it's gone. It's like, well,
yep.
Yeah, but people in this Netflix world, man, we binge and we watch things on different schedules. And, I mean, Tony, as you've heard before on the show, he's one of the biggest geeks we know. He loves consuming media. He loves playing games and doing all this stuff. And, you know, you just heard his schedule. You may have got the wife. Carl's got the wife. Chris has got a wife, but apparently he doesn't love her, so he binged his show.
That was all data in the field, man. Data in the field.
Yeah. See, oh, I mentioned that to Klotz earlier today. It's like I was fortunate when Daredevil Season 1 dropped. I was taking off to go to a conference. I was being paid to go do something there. And so it wasn't like I was doing parties at night or socializing. It was totally a different crowd than normally I would socialize with. So I was just there on a professional basis. So every night, dinner with the people, and all right, see ya, lock myself in the hotel room, and I'd watch 4 hours of Daredevil because there's no guilt because you're not ignoring the family, and I don't have anything I have to do in the next morning except get up and go do more conference stuff, and that worked out pretty well. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying, Chris, but everybody takes this in different directions. So with all that kind of being established, Klotz, you wanted to talk about some storytelling and some acting and different things like that.
Yeah, okay, so it's no secret that early reviews were rough. Our understanding is that early reviewers were given the first six episodes, to watch, and they put out their reviews based on that. Literally, you know, paraphrase slightly here, what I said to Chris when I was watching the first episode is I was like, this is rough. And the issues that I had with the first episode was, well, for one, they just kind of throw you in to Danny. That's not necessarily a good thing. Because Danny is, you know, he's this former rich kid who, you know, through a plane crash, gets stranded in the Himalayas, gets rescued by monks, and he's raised in an interdimensional monastery to be the Iron Fist, basically. So he's back in New York City. He's barefoot. Everybody's seen the teaser intro, you know what I mean? He's understandably jarring through his performance and his interactions with people. And I understand that that is obviously what they were kind of going for, but the way it was introduced, it was just like, you're just in the middle of this super awkward white kid trying to interact with people, and it's awkward. It's really uncomfortable. Yeah. And that I don't think was really the strong foot to start on. And then some of the first fight got a lot. I mean, everybody was talking about the first fight because it's with a few security guards in the building. It's rough. It's real basic. And I've seen different arguments. Like, I've checked out Reddit threads about it and stuff. I've seen people argue, well, you know, he's not trying to hurt the security guards and stuff like that. And I'm like, but it doesn't look tight. Choreography isn't tight. He doesn't look like he's a particularly competent fighter that is controlling these people. He looks like he's just kind of flailing a little bit, and they look like they're flailing too. And then there's a couple individual moves that look pretty rough.
And they actually look like very fake punches, and it was real slow, and like they were counting it out.
I mean, the definition of your like primetime CBS like garbage fighting. This is not good.
Oh, you're into CBS. Wow. That's brutal.
Yeah, I mean, in the world that this kind of content exists in today, where we have the other Netflix shows, which are its peers, we have the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, we have all of the Berlantiverse stuff on CW, that can't fly. Like, you can't have, I mean, Arrow and Flash and stuff, it's campy action, but it's relatively tight, especially the first two seasons of Arrow. That was one of the things that I think got Arrow out of like the being on the wrong network for that kind of content initially, and you know, getting through some of those rough patches early on, was that the fights were pretty tight for a while. Even if they were a little hokey at times, they were well planned and well shot. And I just didn't feel that with this. And then there's this moment in the first episode. By the way, the first episode's fair game for spoilers. If you're listening to this still and you haven't watched even the first episode, that you're on your own. He jumps
also,
over.
I was going to say, it's not going to ruin it. Like, what? He jumps over a car?
You're right.
Damn it. You know.
Yeah. So he jumps over the taxi, and that was painful, physically painful to watch, because it was it just wasn't cut together well. And so the argument I've made with people is, it's a little bit of the fight choreography. A lot of it's the story structure and pacing of that first episode. And it's like a scene like that where it's like, we're trying to show that he's Kung Fu Master and he's going to jump over this taxi, but it's just kind of, right. It's random. The setup is bad. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, he's going to get not hit by the car here. And it just looked terrible. It wasn't even cut to be exciting.
Yeah, the same thing like, when he jumped on that ledge. It was just... It was
when he went up the
poor
wall?
Poor effect. Yeah, just a poor sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it'd almost be better if they just showed him like jump off screen and then he's inside. Kind of, you know what I mean? Like, So it was stuff. It's stuff like that. And that the thing is, when that's your first episode, that sends a really strong message. You know, that this is going to be what it looks like for the rest of the show, and it's not. Like by the third or fourth episode, and arguably the story content of that first episode, it pulls you in. You're like, all right, so
yes, agreed. 100%.
Yeah, he's got his peers that he grew up with. He's trying to convince them that he's really Danny. They're trying to figure out what's going on. They have their reasons to be concerned and wary of this person. He's doing a lot of dumb stuff, which is kind of amusing, but also, like, I call it, like, your Curb Your Enthusiasm level cringe, where you're just like, oh, no, please stop. Nope, I'm going to have to turn this off in a second because you're just way too wrong. So it's a lot of that stuff, but it really finds its legs. Honestly, as the series goes on, the story gets a lot better. It has its moments where it kind of drifts back into, like, you guys kind of phoned in a little bit of the elements here and there. But for the most part, it's really tight, and there's some really exceptional episodes. By far, one of my favorite episodes, mild spoiler here, is I think it's fifth or sixth. It's one directed by the RZA from Wu-Tang Clan, and it is definitely a straight Game of Death, if you remember the Bruce Lee flick. Game of Death style episode where he fights through successive enemies. You know, in an arena. I don't want to give too much away, but that was fun because that was a throwback to classic kung fu flicks.
Here's a fun fact for you. I'm pretty certain RZA directed The Man with the Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yep.
Which is an Iron Fist, but he's like Iron Fist. But he has an Iron Fist.
He has an Iron Fist. Now, my wife picked up on, and I honestly haven't spent that much time looking into it to verify it, but she pulled up the song on her phone. She heard the theme song from Big Trouble in Little China, the stylings of that song. Like when they're second or third episode, when the sister and brother are whining and dining the guy who owns the docks, the wharf, or whatever you want to call it, and they take him out, and she takes him to this place you think is going to be like some kind of indoor fighting ring or something, and it ends up being the hospital situation. I'll just leave it there. she was like, that's Big Trouble in Little China music. I'm like, okay. I mean, it's been forever since I've seen that movie. And, you know, and she pulled up the song, and it is very similar. I'm like, well, it absolutely could be an homage to it, because that's a huge geek reference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of geeking out, you guys as Atlanta natives, you guys had to geek out at the opening sequence, right? Fresh and Clean. I mean,
yeah. I'm like thinking about the title. I was like, well, no, it's kind of like more Daredevil silver painting thing.
So fresh, so quick.
Love it.
Funny enough, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch this. I sat down, I put it on. 2 minutes later, I was on Facebook. 10 out of 10, it opens up with Outkast.
Yeah.
I mean, and I like how they tied it back. That also intrigued me. You know, I was like, oh, it wasn't just to be cool. Mm-hmm. It kind of tied in and made sense. And
right. Because that's what was popular when he disappeared. You know,
and so it was apparently playing, I guess, when they crashed. It was on
his iPod or whatever.
Right, yeah.
His iPod 4 Nano or whatever it is.
That was a really cool touch for me. I mean, I really loved that album from Outkast. For those at home who still had no idea what we're talking about, the opening song is an Outkast song. Outkast is out of Atlanta. Charles and Tony are from the Atlanta area, you know, so it's a big throwback for them.
So we can use that word, Outkast. We're from here.
Yeah, right. we're all ATLians at heart. Yeah.
Right?
Now we've been talking a lot too. Carl, you got anything to throw in on this stuff, man?
So I was debating whether I should tell this story, because I found out that I'm a bad parent this last week. it turns out that my 13-year-old daughter is actually a DC person and not a Marvel person.
Sounds like a good girl.
Well, you know, everybody's allowed their own opinion in life. The way I found this out, and I know one of you had already very loosely made the comparison, I forget which one it was, but you said that you were talking about the action from Arrow. And for me, there's always been, with the exception of obviously major characters, there's always been like parallel characters between DC and Marvel. Like someone at Marvel said, oh, DC's got this character, let's do this. And someone at DC said, oh, Marvel's got this character, let's do this. As I was watching the opening sequence and I was watching those flashbacks to the plane crash and the remote Himalayan mountains, I'm like, this is kind of built on Arrow's story a little bit. Now, I don't know which came first, and I'm sure I might get crucified for that. But I'm just saying, if you're going after a market and you're going after that demographic, that parallel between this character and Arrow, just like plot line wise, totally exists.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's very much the story of Ollie and...
Yeah, you know, and it was at that point that my daughter turned to me. She went, "You shut up! Nobody's like Arrow." So I was like, "All right, well."
I will say, you know, I'm looking forward to watching more Iron Fist. If he becomes Ra's al Ghul, I'm quitting. I'm done.
That's when you know you'll know it's.
Oh, so you haven't seen episode 14 of this season? Then.
Is that the same one where Dormammu shows up?
You know, so somebody mentioned that in our chats, one of our chats on our pages somewhere, that what is up with, oh crap, I picture his name, the guy who created all of Marvel stuff, Stan Lee. What's up with Stan Lee and orphans? It might have been you, Carl, who said that.
No, it was me, because if you look at like most of the characters, they're orphans and they've had this horrible life, and I'm like, why does he always write this depressing stuff? Do you have to be depressed, and do you have to be an orphan, and do you have to just like hate life in order to become a superhero? Because if that's the case, dude, I'm halfway there. I mean, you know.
I think it's probably just the easiest way to signify a great loss in life, and that's, you know, always a hallmark of a good hero is...
Well, see, I always thought Stan Lee was the kind of man who would always work towards the future and not just focus on, hey, I'm creating this one thing for today. And I think he always wanted to sell Marvel to Disney. And the only way to do that is to have a whole bunch of orphans, because Disney hates parents. You know? You're always killing them. So.
You know, that is
as somebody that spent their Saturday evening in a overpriced movie theater in the very, very front row, you know, that break your neck seat, watching Beauty and the Beast this past weekend, I will confirm that Disney does in fact hate parents.
That's so. The first bad thing I've heard. I've heard nothing but, well, it's mostly chicks, but I've heard it was pretty good.
So I know this is totally not the topic, but I'll tell you what I think. It didn't impress me because it's the same damn story. Nothing has changed. It's the same damn story, just with people not with totally animated. But a lot of it was green screen and a lot of it was CGI, but it's the same damn story. And the other thing I'm going to add here, because I was really mad when I left the theater. See, I did not want to go see this movie, but they dragged me. They made me see it. So I'm going to tell you something else that really annoyed me about this movie, because you know we started the show talking about, you know, people upset because of the ethnicity. So Beauty and the Beast, people upset because there's a gay character. Look, if you've never seen the original, and if it weren't for this one little clip, and it's not even 2 seconds, because I was like, oh, there it is, and my wife went, where, what are you talking about, because it was so quick. But that character, I believe it's LaFleur, I think it is.
LaFleur,
yes. He's always been like that. He's always been kind of a loon. And you don't know that he's supposed to be the gay character. You really don't know it. There's nothing in the movie to say, oh, this character is obviously gay. Like I said, except for this one little scene at the very end, it's like a millisecond long.
This one scene where he's like boning a dude.
Yeah, and it was just caught in pan. That was it. It was like, oh, camera panned over. Hey, what the hell was that? But yeah, that's it.
Wasn't even a post-credit stinger, huh?
Exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to completely derail.
No, it was the dual wedding between, you know, Beast and Beauty and LaFleur and whoever his partner.
Candle, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, back to Iron Fist.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I will say that back in Iron Fist, the character development I've really enjoyed. I said this in my little live take last night on Giant Size Team Up Network Facebook page that... it is a slow burn, but I enjoy a TV series that takes time to tell you about the characters to get you invested in the long term. I mean, okay, Daredevil did a slow show for the first episode. Second episode had one of the most epic fight scenes ever filmed, you know, with the hallway and the way the camera panned around, blah, blah.
I'm going to remind you of this in a minute because we're going to talk about that.
But okay. Well, all right. So, but what I'm saying is they jump to the action fairly quickly. So I like that, you know, I'm seeing new things about Colleen Wing every episode. You see character development there, and you makes you question, oh, what's going on? Why is she doing this? You see in the three people, and everybody knows I'm horrible with names when it comes to characters. You're lucky I got Danny Rand out. But yeah, the three
characters, you got the white guy name. You got that one.
Yeah. Well.
And then some other people, you know.
I got Colleen Wing. Come on.
She's got like half a white girl's name.
No, that's just wrong.
Other people, in fact.
That was that is not the views held by the Giant Size Teamwork or Teamwork Network or Charles McFall. But the three white rich people, I forget, okay? The dad, the brother, and the daughter.
The Meachums.
Uh-huh. There you go, the Meachums. Even them, seeing from moment to moment, seeing the scene, the interaction and how it plays and figuring it out, I like that everything seems to be building. I like, I don't know if we want to talk about what happened in the second and third episode, but I like how things progress and you're getting more story and you're getting more character. There are times when Danny's character does things that I wouldn't expect, because he did spend 15 years with Monk, so to come back and be angry and want to take his company back in that one scene where he's facing off with him, like, that seemed a little... Right. It could have been more pointed. Okay, so and there's a lawyer scene that I believe this is non-spoilery. There's a lawyer scene where Brother Meacham, I forget his freaking name.
Ward,
thank you. Ward, I should know that. Anyway, Ward Meacham says that, you could have made this simple. You could have just taken the money. The appropriate line preceding the line he actually gave should have been, you could have made this simple and just talk to me. Because that's all he ever wanted was answers and reconnection. But they skipped that, and they did go with the line. I forget what it was. It was a valid line that they went with, but they should have come back with that. And I thought it was out of character a little bit for him to at any point talk about money, because he was never about that. That's why he didn't even buy clothes. He was a traveler. You know, I made a point to my wife, like, in Europe, you dress like that, you're a traveler. You're somebody who is backpacked, you're traveling around all of Europe. In America, you're homeless. You know, I mean, that's the automatic assumption.
Or just a college student, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know. Well, they went with the homeless aspect.
Or Starbucks employee. No.
I liked the character development so far in all
of those. Yeah, you know, I got to say, I think maybe more than any of its peers, this show does character development a very interesting way. Because you mentioned Colleen. You know, we get a little snippet of Colleen, and it's like, all right, so this is a tough woman, you know, and you can tell that there's some pain or trauma that has made her kind of tough on the exterior. But immediately, even though she's kind of tough, she's got some warmth and compassion. You can see it, and that builds throughout the the season. And you also see it in Joy and Ward, you know, the Meachums. And it's like, these are cold, calculating business people who also grew up with Danny. You know what I mean? And so even though they're cold, calculating, successful business people that are running, you know, Danny's parents' multi-billion dollar corporation, they are still given pause at regular turns by the fact that this might actually be Danny. Even Ward, yeah. Ward is set up to be the guy that you're supposed to hate until you get about halfway through the series.
Before that, even.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. You start to see that the story's a lot more complex. Yeah.
Nope. Just hate. Hate.
Because
dead,
he reminds you of yourself?
You had zero sympathy for him, like, especially towards, like, later on.
Yeah, and I think.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to get into any details, but
I think they sold that character well enough at the beginning, because, you know, I'd been chatting back and forth with you about before I got to a few episodes, and there was nothing that happened in this show that redeemed him for me in any way, shape, or form.
Really?
I still want the guy to die.
That's still the interesting thing, though. That's the thing for me. It's not necessarily that it redeems him, but it expands on the complexity of the character, and you become sympathetic to it. But at the same time, you're like, oh, man, like, you basically find out that it's not really his fault that he's the way he is, and he's dealing with some things, but at the same time, he still makes his choices. You know what I mean? So, Chris, I feel you. You could still hate the guy, but at the end of the day, you realize it's not as cut and dry as he's just an evil, money-grubbing bastard. Because that's not who he's a more complex character than that. And the same thing with Joy. You see Joy teeter back and forth from, like, hyper-compassionate towards Danny towards, I'm a badass bitch businesswoman who's going to tear this town apart. You know what I mean? And I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed that these characters were fully realized three-dimensional characters. They weren't just caricatures. You know what I mean? They weren't just archetypes. And that was great. Especially a character that I don't want to name right now, because it's a little bit of a surprise.
Dormammu!
Dormammu. When Dormammu shows up. Because that character that I don't want to mention, and if you've seen it, you'll know who I'm talking about, they also exhibit some of those traits as well, you know? Of course, if we're going to talk about characters, our girl Claire shows up again.
Mm-hmm.
And she's fantastic. By the way,
Night Nurse.
I love the fact that Claire Temple is the glue that binds the Defenders world together.
Well, then you get, of course,
Hogarth.
Don't forget Hogarth.
She's a relatively recent addition, though. I'm talking about basically from season one of Daredevil, Claire.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I will tell you, I only audibly cheered twice up through the episodes that I have seen. And one of those was when they introduced Claire into this episode. I was like, yes, she's back, finally. You know, the thread, like you were saying, the thread is there. And the other moment was, and I know that we were chatting before this, the other moment was Carrie-Anne Moss.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That was like, hey, that's Carrie-Anne Moss. This just went from, you know, probably a 5 or 6 to definitely a 10 kind of series.
And she's great too, because that's another
she's
character.
She's always phenomenal.
Again, another. I'm going to reuse the phrase "badass bitch" who's going to tear this town apart because she's mean and she's not there to play games. But then she's also compassionate, you know, because she has a connection with various characters. And when she has a connection with those characters, she's not, you know, just some evil bitch who steals money from corporations.
The moment where he called her G money or something like that, when the hugger's like, nope, we don't do that.
Yes.
We went in for the hug.
That was great.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, not only do we have these two connective tissue characters, but just the little nods to everybody else without naming names. Mm-hmm. For, you know, the big defenders coming in. We're showing the secondary characters that keep all these shows intertwined, and we just a little nod to each of the others. Just like at the end of last season of Daredevil, right? With the Colleen Wing Flyer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The setup, yeah. I really feel like, honestly, going back to Claire for just a second, I feel like she's going to be the heart and soul of the Defenders team-up.
Yes.
Like, when they assemble that team, she's going to be... As a matter of fact, I don't want to be a prophet or anything here, but, like, so much so that I worry that we lose her in the Defenders.
That was actually what I was going to say. I was like, or they kill her off.
Yeah. I hope that's not the case, but it's very, very possible that they're building up to that.
Well, but they're not the Avengers. They're not the Avengers. Exactly. They don't need something to avenge. They need something to defend.
Nicely put. I was going to say, in Marvel, we don't call that killing them off. We call that Coulsoning them.
She's going to Tahiti?
Yeah. So I'm with you, Klaus. Even though I haven't made it that far, I know you. I at least hope that she was in it, and I'm glad that she is the because Rosario Dawson has always been one of my favorite actresses since she came on the scene. And I discovered her in the '90s. I don't know exactly when she started doing her thing. She could have been acting long before I, you know, started watching her. But
yeah, she's very talented. She's very you know, she's warm and approachable. You know what I mean? As an actress, like she. She brings a lot of depth to whatever character she plays, and I really enjoy that. Like, she just seems like somebody you want to hang out with, you know what I mean? No matter who she's playing. I don't think I've ever seen her play, like, a bad guy, quote-unquote, where I was like, oh, she sucks. Like,
boo Rosario Dawson.
Yeah. dare you, sir.
Another nice part about this is her kind of intro to the story is she's training with Colleen, and because she keeps getting into the shit, you know, like... Mm-hmm. Things keep happening, and she's like, well, I gotta learn to defend myself, because I'm friends with all these, like, super people who are, like, not super, super people, so I'm often getting attacked by the Hand and other baddies. So that was cool that, you know, she's kind of stepping up in that regard. I mean, I don't think she's gonna become, you know, the fifth combo hit in the big team strike or anything, but, like, she's gonna defend herself and not be, you know, the damsel in distress all the time anymore.
Well, we already have that too with Luke Cage, the way she made her appearance there, being mugged as soon as she came out of the train station and and running it down. And yeah,
so speaking of like combo punch attacks and stuff,
is this where I take my headphones off or are we still good?
No. I just want to talk a little bit about the action itself, because this is something that's been criticized a bit. We talked about it in that first episode. I'm gonna pass it around the room first and see how you guys feel about the fight choreography and all that stuff, and then I'm gonna dig into it a little bit on the end. So, Charles, how's it struck you so far?
Honestly, sometimes I actually forget to watch it. Like I'm messing with my phone or something, and because I don't. So far, the show has been great dialogue and great character development with a little bit of action. So watching Colleen somehow magically learn the leopard punch from seeing it one time, or having it used on her one time, actually, I was like, eh. But otherwise, I am the 80s kid, right? So I love dumb action. In any action, I like good fighting. I can really appreciate great choreography, but I don't get lost without it. So I didn't notice the sloppiness of the fight. I was kind of going along with the character, like, "What? Why are you hitting me? Why are you trying to hit me? What are you doing?" And and kind of being caught off guard, I didn't notice the sloppiness of the choreography. When they do start pushing more, and again, I'm only through episode 4. But when they do start pushing more against Danny, especially with him and Colleen going at it a little bit in the dojo, that was fun. and enjoyable is how I would classify the choreography.
Okay. Chris?
For me, the first episode was that outlier. I think I described that lobby scene as Power Ranger-ish. Fight choreography after that, I think it kind of takes a hit, and I'll make a point that I made in our chat, is that since Batman Begins, we've been accustomed to this training, as it were, by directors and filmmakers, that if the hero's not taking a hit, then it's not a real fight. The difference here being that while Batman is, you know, one of the world's best fighters, he's going to have to take a hit. Daredevil is, he's been highly trained. Do we know that he's one of the world's best fighters? And he's going to take a hit. Their fight styles are completely different. Kung Fu is one of those redirection fight styles that not only are you redirecting their force to use against them, but your moves are more fluid. It's about economy of motion. And so when they continue to show Danny going through the katas and practicing his form and his style, it should look like a dance. So I get a little outside that first episode when people start complaining about it's over choreographed and why isn't he taking more hits? It's because this dude is a supernatural master of Kung Fu. He shouldn't be taking hits, and it should look like a dance. Because if you go to the park in the morning and you see the people out doing Tai Chi, it's just a slowed down dance. And if they start speeding it up, you can easily, you know, put in fight choreography. I don't have a problem with it to the degree that I've seen on the internet, barring that first episode. And I think that was just because the fight choreography was not as well done. I think it was sloppy versus over choreographed. But I'm okay. I'm 100% okay with Danny, you know, basically dancing around these enemies. And he does take his fair share of hits. And when he does, I mean, they're important hits. So.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
I only saw the first episode, and the action I thought was bad. I'm glad, and I'm looking forward to what you were saying about that it gets better. It makes me wonder if are you guys still there?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're here.
Oh, sorry, someone got dropped. Anyway, I'm sorry. So it makes me look forward to what you're saying that it gets better. It makes me wonder if maybe they filmed in sequence or something, like they did the first episode the first day and then they just got better. I am curious. While we were talking, I was scrolling through Facebook. Not that I wasn't paying attention. And there's an article. The headline is, this 35-second Iron Fist fight scene has 57 cuts, and it looks horrible. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It looks like it's one that where they're in a warehouse. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to see how bad that is. But yeah, first episode, meh, with the action, but... That's not why I'm
also
watching it.
Yeah, there's also not a lot of fighting in that first episode comparative to the rest of the series. So that's fair. Carl?
So I was actually really good with everything right up until I heard one of you speak earlier. And so I'm still really good with it, but the taxi cab scene... Mm-hmm. was completely ruined by one of you. I don't remember which one was talking about.
No, that was me.
Yeah, no, you totally ruined that scene for me, because as I'm listening to you talk, I'm going, yeah, oh my God, yeah, all right. But the rest of the action, I mean, I've kind of been on board with it. I haven't seen anything that jumped out at me as, wow, this is really corny, wow, this is really bad, because I know... I tried my best to block out all of the negative reviews because I wanted to go in with an open mind, and I was really on board for all of it. And like I said, I watched the action scenes and I watched the stuff, and like you said, it was 5 or 6, the old school type, you know, episode 5 or 6 it was. And I really have had no problems with any of the action in anything. I think it's par for the course from what we've got. I don't know. I'm not a filmmaker, but I didn't see the bad. I didn't see the bad cuts. I didn't see the... It was a lot like the Kung Fu, like you guys were talking about, because Kung Fu is supposed to be fluid.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're just not jaded enough, Carl, and we don't want you.
take that positivity and get the heck out of here.
Shall I go back to talking about what I do for my day job? Would that be more of a wet blanket?
Well, I will say my whole upbringing in Kung Fu was originally I got exposed to Jackie Chan's American films, but then I actually went back and looked at his previous films that he had done that were straight up Kung Fu and read his biography and all that. And I'm with Chris. I mean, it's sloppy, but it's effective. I mean, he fought 40 axe wielding warriors in one of the films using a ladder and a two story building instead. And when they pulled out the axe or hatchets, I guess they're hatchets. When they pulled out the hatches in the hallway in one of the episodes, like, yes, hatchet man. Yes. You know, but I don't think he needs to take a hit necessarily.
Well, okay, so I guess I'll jump in now and get into heavy nitpicking now. So the hatchet scene is actually pretty good because you felt the tension and you felt the danger, you know, that he could actually take a hatchet, you know what I mean, in that scene, and it would not be a good thing. But a lot of the scenes, like my big issue, and I might be just projecting my perspective here, I felt like maybe Finn Jones, the actor who plays Danny, didn't put in as much training as a lot of people do for this kind of role, because I felt like his execution was kind of sloppy. And maybe it's choreography, you know, maybe it's whoever planned the sequences. It might have fallen on them and he's perfectly capable. I just didn't see it. And my issue is, Danny is supposed to be a bumbling idiot in social interactions, but he's not supposed to be a bumbling idiot in his kung fu. He's supposed to be tight. He's supposed to be a master, like we said just a little while ago. And I didn't see that in a lot of the fights. I saw him, actually, to the opposite of what Chris was saying, I saw him taking unnecessary hits fairly often. You know, I saw him just not really. And I think they tried to make a show of it a couple of times of him adopting different techniques. Like he, you know, he took Crouching Tiger at one point and, you know, a couple of different kung fu techniques. But like when I think of kung fu in its best form in film, I think of stuff like a lot of the Jet Li films that were done in China. One of my favorites is the remake version of what was Bruce Lee's Chinese Connection. I forget what the other name of it is. But that was fantastic. A lot of his work that he did over here in the West was also quite good. The fights themselves, or I think of more recently, Donnie Yen's, take on Ip Man, the Wing Chun practitioner, you know what I mean? An iconic Kung Fu legend, you know what I mean? And they did three films. And there's actually a guy on YouTube called Rossitron. He has a great channel if you're into action flicks, and particularly like 80s, 90s action. And he did a really good analysis on how, even though those three fights, the first two of those Ip Man films were kind of, they're done with the same, you know, director, and they were done in a similar style. The third one was done with a slightly different one. They did a really good job of demonstrating Wing Chun against various different fighting styles, you know, because in one film he fights other Chinese, you know, kung fu artists. In the second film he fights some Westerners and some Japanese. In the third film he fights a boxer. And it shows, you know, how he can really tightly execute that style. And I wanted to see more of that. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to see a lot more of that. I wanted to see him executing various kung fu techniques against different fighting styles and kind of just letting it be a little bit of a demonstration, if you will. I didn't see it. You know what I mean? It in a lot of scenes, it didn't feel that different than, like, watching Daredevil. You know, where Daredevil's fighting style is just kind of tight. It's street fighting. It's brutal, you know?
Brawler, yeah.
Yeah, Daredevil is not a technique guy. He's a, I'm just going to get in there, I'm going to rope-a-dope a bit, you know, and then I'm going to kick your ass. And I felt like Danny was doing a little bit too much of that, and that was kind of frustrating. Subsequently, I found it interesting with Colleen Wing's choreography, because they've made the katana a big part of her, and it's a big part of her characterization, and it's a big part of, like, her identity, and it's always in her hands in lots of scenes. And half the time, she just leaves it in the scabbard, and she's just bopping people with it, which is, in and of itself, actually kind of has some appeal to me, because I would, you know, there's in some anime and stuff, there's been the, like, the reverse sword where the outside of the blade is blunted but the inside is sharp. That's been used to effect before, where it's like, well, this isn't an offensive weapon, it's a defensive weapon. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been stuff done where they've shown people with a bakken, which is a wooden katana, and they've, you know, done work with it, and she actually had one at one point. And, you know, I wanted to see, you know, they made a big deal about her being a swordswoman, and I didn't really see so much sword work for her. And
so far, in four episodes, she has not even unsheathed it yet, which I know is a style from different martial arts, is you don't take it out until you're ready to kill somebody. And she's obviously not a natural born killer. She's not.
Right. Going, well, which is fair, too, because that is, you know, an that's the same argument that, you know, our modern firearms takes, is that, you know, everybody who's trained to use firearms is trained. You don't point a gun at anything you don't intend to kill, you know, because it's not a good idea for a while.
I agree, actually, with all of your points, but I don't think it's fair to compare Finn Jones, who I've never heard of before, Iron Fist. He was sort of a knight in Game of Thrones, right?
Well, in Game of Thrones, he was the knight. Like, outside of what's his name, Jaime Lannister. Mm-hmm. Once Jaime Lannister loses his hand, Ser Loras is the best fighter in the realm. You know what I mean?
But I don't think it's fair to compare him to Bruce Lee and Donnie Yen. You know, that's just a totally different caliber. I wouldn't expect. You know, to have that good choreography, you have to have two good fighters, you know.
Right,
that
but I would
really know what they're doing.
I would say that the thing is, though, this is Iron Fist. You know what I mean?
Yes. No, and I agree with you there. I do.
You know what I mean?
If Finn Jones can't do it, then find someone who can.
Well, yeah, that was my issue.
Well, and I think to be
maybe an Asian person.
And I think maybe to be a little fair toward just the characterization and what you perceive as sloppiness in the fighting technique, most of the parts where I saw him start to take those hits that weren't necessary, that's when he found himself in conflict, and he was trying to fight against the anger and trying to fight against the style that he was taught. So once you're having that internal struggle, it's going to translate into your style and how much you can.
You've actually just touched on my biggest, like, icky point of the whole series.
Okay.
His angsty struggle with his anger and everything, I find it very jarring. Mostly because he looks ridiculous every time he clutches his face.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, in the middle of a life or death struggle. See, one of my issues is, like, a lot of that stuff doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, he's trained, he says it every 5 minutes, right? I'm a weapon. I've been trained to be a weapon. I'm trained to be the best weapon. And in virtually every fight, he's having a moral dilemma and almost reduced to weeping like a child. And I'm like, that's not how it works in real life. Like, if you're trained to be a weapon, I mean, Chris, you're military. You push your emotions aside and you execute, and then afterwards you deal with the emotional fallout.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
In the moment, you do what you were trained to do. That's the whole point of training, right?
Yes.
You know, and he's been training for 15 years. You know what I mean? He's been training for the length of time that is most people's entire career. In, you know, something where they would have to fight on a regular basis. So that's my thing, is it's like the fighting itself should come natural to him. The struggle should probably be that he goes maybe too far when he doesn't mean to, because he's the weapon. You know what I mean? So there was some of that stuff where it's like, well, what you're setting up story-wise isn't matching what you're demonstrating in the fights, what you're demonstrating in his moments of crisis, stuff like that. And I'm not trying to, like, I really did enjoy the series. You know what I mean? Like, I enjoyed the whole
season. Yeah, we can tell.
I'm not trying to dump on it as a whole. My hope is that in Defenders, well, since he won't be a central character in Defenders, well, he'll be part of it, but he won't be the main character. Hopefully, there'll be a lot less of him whining like a 90s kid. Because
the comics I did read with him, he was a bit of a agitator. He was always kind of an uppity. Mm-hmm. Hey, there's a D word that I want to drop here, but he was kind of that.
Yeah, you know?
And. That's the Danny I knew was arrogant, untouchable, and a little bit. Everybody's like, why do we keep you around? Oh yeah, you're cool, but why do we? You're kind of a the friend that we don't want, but we like. You know.
Well, for my money, the times that Danny in comics has always been more relatable and more fun. It's always Iron Fist and Power Man. Once he gets to play off of Luke Cage, that's when we'll get to see. That's an important dynamic that if they don't sell that properly, that I'll feel cheated. Because in the comics, that's when he shines, is when he can play off Luke.
Well, that makes sense.
Let me ask you this. Do you think our current Iron Fist, will they even go well together? Like, I can't picture it just yet.
Oh, they're going to connect on music, son. Come on.
Is that Outcast?
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying, Tony. But I'm only four episodes in, and yeah, he's got to lose some of that freshness. He's got to lose some of that childlike mentality for me to see him clicking with Jessica Jones, who is the burnout of the group, for lack of better words. You know, the alcoholic, seen way too much life, and they are oil and water currently in where I am in the Iron Fist series.
Well, I mean, you're definitely going to see like that mostly unchecked optimism from him in the face of, you know, Matt Murdock's kind of constant skepticism. Obviously, Jessica Jones's constant skepticism and Luke Cage's like ambivalence most of the time, because Luke doesn't really like commit either way a lot of times. I mean, he's hopeful for positive results, but he always expects the worst kind of thing. Yeah. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see how they play that all together. From what I understand, I think they've just recently finished filming Defenders. So whatever is going to happen with it, it's already essentially locked in. I find that an interesting choice in the wake of, I would almost think you would want to have released Iron Fist before you just jumped into finishing all of your Defenders run. But I guess that maybe isn't the way these things work.
Yeah.
Because I would think that I would want a chance to kind of address some things after I get my final bit of feedback from the last key character. But we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, I definitely think there's a little bit of a stumbling there, but it's not all bad. It's not as bad as some people are portraying it either.
I would have to say I've enjoyed every bit of it so far.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Like when he jumped to the ledge to break into the house, I just chalked that up too. Okay, it's a comic book. They're being a little comic book goofy.
Yeah. Oh, there's a few things like that, but most of it's fine. There's some great moments, though. I mean, you know, Madame Gao shows up again. Uh-huh. That's not really a spoiler. She's been in some of the trailers.
She's in the trailers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's fantastic. Every time she's in a scene, she's like, oh, is this the Madame Gao show? Because, I mean, I would watch that.
Exactly.
Yeah, when's that Netflix series coming?
One of the best, oh man, I can't, because so many of you haven't gotten all the way through it, but let me just say what this show probably did better than any of the other three is it gave you a more complete picture of what's going on, as far as nothing is black and white. You know what I mean? Not every villain is always the villain in every situation. Not every hero is always the hero. You know, just because you think somebody's bad doesn't mean that there isn't some good coming out of what they're doing. And sometimes the one that you think is your big bad is actually keeping the biggest bad in check. And I found that kind of interesting, that you start to see kind of the scope of a bigger chess game unfold in this series here. So
I think everybody just needs to take the high praise that they just got from Charles, that he's enjoyed it so far and there hasn't been a single giant robot fighting or transforming anywhere.
Or, you know, there's been a minimal amount of explosions in Charles.
I don't think I've seen any explosions so far. I'm very happy. I'm okay.
You know, wait till Dormammu shows up.
A boy can hold out hope for robots and explosions.
That's right. Carl, you got any last words, sir?
Last words? No, not really. I did want to share a conversation and throw it out to the group that I had as I was leaving my office today to come home and do this. But we were talking about Iron Fist, and a lot of us in the office watch the whole, you know, all of these Defenders quite regularly. And the question was thrown out, which was list them. List your list in order of preference. And I know I threw mine out there and it was really bad. And well, for me, it was great, but everybody else kind of ran over me. But I'll throw it out here. I'll throw out what mine was. And then, you know, you guys tell me what you think. Because for me personally, and I think I might get run over in this group too, based on some of the previous comments, but for me personally, it, you know, listing in order, it was Daredevil season 2, and then it was Luke Cage, and then it's Iron Fist, Daredevil season one,
and then
Jessica Jones.
Sexist MF-er.
No, it's because of it's what you said exactly. Is she's the burnout of the group, and
she is,
yeah. I just kept watching this, going, "Oh my God, pull yourself together, woman! What is wrong with you?"
Well, you know what? I like that idea. So, does anybody else want to list their favorites in order?
Yeah. Okay, I'll jump. I would agree. I would put Daredevil season two as the top. I think that's been the pinnacle of what these Netflix shows has been so far. I'm gonna edit a little bit here and say that I'm gonna put season one of Daredevil as my second pick, just because it really set the tone for everything else. And I think the character work in Daredevil is exceptional. So the fights are great, at least early on in the season. I think if you're somebody who pays attention to the fights, you'll notice that they start phoning it in more towards the end of the season. That's actually something that occurs in both seasons of Daredevil, is the first couple episodes are real strong and trying to set a tone fight-wise, and then they just start kind of doing the little more phoned-in ones towards the end of the season. But, I mean, Daredevil, the rise and fall of Kingpin, you know, the season two story, like, I don't think we've gotten better out of any of the comic stories, period. You know what I mean? Of TV shows. I definitely go with Luke Cage in the third spot. Iron Fist I'll put in the fourth spot. And then I'm going to put Jessica Jones last. The reason I'm going to put Jessica Jones last is, well, here's the thing. I'm going to raise
a point. Good for you.
Somebody, a couple people I've seen voice's opinion on Reddit, and I agree with it. The Netflix shows from Marvel could stand to shed anywhere in the neighborhood of like 3 to 4 episodes per season. It's not necessarily that I want less of the show. It's just that they take a couple extra episodes to get there that they just don't need. And Jessica Jones is the one where it is the most agonizing, just because there's like nothing going on. You know what I mean? Obviously there's stuff going on, but it's like, I don't really need 2 or 3 episodes with Kilgrave antagonizing her. I get it. We understand what he does to her. You know what I mean? That's been firmly established at this point. So if they trim the shows up and kept them under 10 episodes a season, for all of them, period, which they're doing with Defenders. Defenders is going to be much shorter. I don't know what their plan is coming out of Defenders as far as who they're going to keep running with. Honestly, they might be best suited to like pair up a little bit and run that way, if you catch my drift. Okay. Like getting Luke Cage and Power Man would be great. Possibly getting Daredevil, or with Jessica Jones maybe thrown in the mix, maybe not. Getting Daredevil and somebody would be great too. But yeah, like that's the thing, is like there's definitely some fat that could be trimmed from all 5 seasons of the Netflix shows so far, and that's how I feel.
I agree with that. And it's funny that they're going to trim the episodes on Defenders, where they actually now have the characters to do more stories. Every one of them, although I've liked them all, I think you're right. They all kind of stumble at the end, and take a weird turn halfway through. As far as order, I guess I like Daredevil season one. I actually like Jessica Jones. I think mine might be in order. Daredevil season one, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage.
I mean, you...
Daredevil season two only because it's what's left, and then Iron Fist. What's important, I guess, to it's kind of a cheat, is that's not to say Daredevil season two is fourth place. Like it's still also good. It's just more of Daredevil one. So that's why I kind of put it.
Punisher later. Though.
Dude, I was just gonna say that. I'm like, come on, it's the Punisher. The Punisher is the greatest.
I get what Tony's saying. Okay, it's fun.
Yeah, I feel you. My thing is Punisher.
Yeah, it is Punisher. But the Elektra storyline was so weak.
She was okay. I mean,
the actress
was fine, and but the story itself was a little.
For Tony's money, there is no better Elektra than Jennifer Garner.
Oh my God. Why did we ever allow that?
I've said on our podcast numerous times, I stand by it. The dude with the tattoos was cool. All right. That 2 minutes that he was in that movie, that was a cool character.
Oh man,
Chris, do you have an order?
Yeah, I think for me, it's not. You can't do these. You can't make that judgment without talking about the antagonists. So for me, it's Daredevil season one because we got D'Onofrio Kingpin. Daredevil season two, because I'm counting Punisher as the antagonist. But he's not really, but he's still there. I mean, you get some good hand stuff. Jessica Jones, because Tenant, Purple Man, come on. Mm-hmm. Come on now. Luke Cage, if Copperhead hadn't gone out so soon, I probably would have rated that one. He probably would have
taken it. Cottonmouth?
Or Cottonmouth, yeah, sorry, Cottonmouth.
Jesus,
I said Copperhead.
You're going to make Fallout?
I did. and then
Who's the brother, the villain that came in later?
Diamondback.
Oh,
yeah. So that sucked too.
Diamondback.
The switch off Cottonmouth to Diamondback is literally the worst derailment of a show I've ever seen in my life.
Agreed. That is, they dropped the baton.
They lost all their momentum at that point, and it was hard to recover. Chris, go ahead though. Finish up your list.
Now, Iron Fist, putting last, and I'm putting in it, and it's not about the antagonist or the protagonist. For me, I don't know why Danny Rand has to be a beard baby.
Tire all these damn beard babies. You
know, if there is anything in this world I don't need more of, it's beard babies.
Get these beard babies off this plane.
If you'd like to hear more on that reference, you can check out Botch Podcast at the Giant Size Team Up Network or at botchpodcast.com.
That's true.
Hey, someone spoil this for me. Does he doesn't shave at all?
Never. Never.
No. And Charles, I'd let you read your list off, but we'll just ask DC on screen to tell us.
Oh, there it is. Honestly, I agree with what you're saying about Luke Cage. That transfer of one bad guy to the other was weird, and there's other moments that were weird, but I got to put Luke Cage as my first, just from Luke Cage himself being awesome and the music and the history that they really pulled out and taught the rest of the world about.
Don't pander to me, Charles. Don't pander.
I want everybody to know it's okay for Tony to use that word. He is a panda, so he can say pander all at once. You know, it's fine. It's fine. We can't say it, but he can say it.
You can't say panda with a hard R, though. I mean.
I absolutely loved that. And I always love, I love the darkness. I've made the argument about my I realize how that just came off, but let me finish the thought.
I'm not mad at that at all.
I love you, Tony. Jessica Jones was my second because she was the burnout, because she was so heavy. And that's something that Marvel doesn't, they love to stay with their bright Captain Americas and their shiny Iron Man, and they will put some damage in there, but it's these bright colors, and Jessica Jones was so dark. That was my second favorite, and honestly, I'm with Tony. I like all of them hold a special place in my heart, right? So I loved the Punisher. I like how Bernthal did that. See, I got a name. I got a name better than Chris dropped the name. So,
well, I mean, you're practically in love with the man. So
I just whizzed on it. Is that saying now you can say you can McFall it? I can say I whizzed it.
You got it. Yeah,
there you go. Iron Fist, only because I'm 4 in, is probably the last on the favorites. But honestly, this could be a dumpster fire train wreck, and I'm going to watch it all the way through because it's Marvel, and it's Netflix. And honestly,
it's only 13 episodes.
Yeah, and so it's not. I mean, I'm enjoying the show fully. I'm just saying it's kind of like their HBO set a standard for cable TV, right? HBO has a hard time. They can mess up. They have a hard time messing up and missing the mark. I think Netflix and Marvel have a very difficult time missing the mark. Any other network, any other show, if they had done that Cottonmouth transfer, where it's just this, what the heck just happened in this show? We went sideways all of a sudden. If they'd handled it that way, that show would have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have been canceled. The mid-break, had they done that.
The thing is, Luke Cage went from having an Oscar-winning antagonist.
God, he was so good.
To having somebody, and I'm sorry, I'm going to dump on the actor because the performance was terrible. Who's essentially a community theater level.
It felt like blaxploitation when he came in. It felt like they were absolutely trying to do blaxploitation when he.
I can see how you could take that actor and write for him and get him to the right place to have an interesting character, just not the big bad. You know what I mean? He had no charm. You know what I mean? He was just like. he's a good thug, a good henchman, you know, like he's the mid-level boss, not the end boss, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
I'm sure somebody in that production is like, what did we do? What? The role should have been reversed.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
You know, that would have fixed it. Like, your baddest dude should have been the first guy.
Well, I mean, it stands as, like, you have four primary villains in that show, right? You've got Cottonmouth, Diamondback, Black Mariah, and Shades. Mm-hmm. Shades is amazing. Mm-hmm. Black Mariah is, again, an Oscar. I believe she's an Oscar winner. The gentleman who plays Cottonmouth just recently won an Oscar. Mm-hmm. I can never remember his name.
Mahershala Ali.
Yeah. And he's fantastic in everything he does. Yeah. I loved him on... what's that other Netflix show, Politics? Why can't I think of it? I'm pulling a McFall / Wisdom.
I haven't seen that, but I loved it in the 4400.
What's the one with Kevin Spacey?
Oh, House of Cards.
Yeah, House of Cards.
I didn't realize he's in that. So
he was a lobbyist, and you know he was central to a few plot points. He was fantastic on that. So we're talking really.
He's just a good actor, like
top shelf actors, right? Yeah. And then you've got this guy that I've never heard of or seen before, who's like B movie level acting, and the character itself. I mean, first of all, his big suit up to start kicking Luke Cage's ass. He looks ridiculous. Now, I mean, there's a point where Luke Cage has the TR on, and that looks better. That throwback to the 70s style was like, all right, that's funny.
It was tongue-in-cheek, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a little too campy for what they were going for. At least not for your big bad, you know what I mean? At least for that season. So, yeah, that was my big thing, is like, you have... four villains, three of them are top shelf. Like, they could carry any other show, any of the three, you know, the other three. And they are all on the same show, and it was great. You know what I mean? Because that's the thing, is like, if Black Mariah had just, like, amped up after she kills...
Hey, for the record, is that a character name, or are we just getting weird?
We're getting weird.
No. Okay, in the comic books, Mariah is referred to as Black Mariah.
What the listeners don't know is that Paul's sister's name is Mariah, and that's why he has to make the distinction.
That's just wrong, Chris.
My sister's name is not Mariah.
In all sincerity, I did not know that was the character's name.
Yeah, they make a reference to it once in the show, and she explodes. I mean, she lost her cool when he referenced that.
I think Chris is getting confused with his sister, whose name is Maria.
And on this racist note, what's in the show?
Maria Negra.
Oh, Lord.
I can say that.
It's Spanish.
If you made it this far, congratulations. You have broken the internet. Thank you, Tony, for being on and being the sane voice in what we're doing here. Tell everybody, we've talked about Geek Versus, but give the promo you want to give, man.
Yeah, man, if I'm the sane voice, you know things are bad. I think things get weird on our show and our website as well. We just launched our new website. It's simply geekversus.com. Our articles, our podcasts, our videos, our social media, everything is at geekversus.com.
Very cool. I'm looking at it now, see what the new website looks like. Carl, go ahead and tell everybody about your stuff.
You can find me at irusa.org/podcasts. And I emphasize the S because when IT set up the website, for some reason, podcast is our RSS feed and podcasts is the actual page. So that's where you can learn about the What a Relief podcast. And you can also find me over at vennetwork.org, where we're doing some podcasts over there. And there's still a few more that we're working out. So, yeah. What up?
I didn't know we were like we had to wrap up like being hard and yeah, so that's what's up. Geekversus.com.
you're not bringing water to the world, and you're not tough. Those are two things that we've learned today in this show.
.org. I wish you would say something.
What you gonna do with that, son?
And of course, you can catch Klotz and Wisdom and myself every week here on Breaking the Panel, where we have fun talking about all the news and discussion and slamming on each other. We like to do that a whole lot too. So check out the Facebook page. We've got this thing launched out. It is Giant Size Team Up Network on Facebook, where you'll see clips and videos and show promos and everything you need to know about all the shows are going on the Giant Size Team Up Network. So definitely give that a look this week. And tune in next week to hear Chris Wisdom say.
I
so help me God, now. If you get racist, I'm gonna fire you.
I can't get racist. I'm a half breed. I can get culturally insensitive, but I can't get racist.
Well, you're not all the races, right? Like...
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. And you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at GiantSizeTeamUp.com.